a broke single mom who'd been fired from Denny's go on to become America's most sought-after real estate investor. Hold on to your seats as you are about to go on a wild ride that results in you being a superstar. Dwan Van Twyberg, a.k.a. Dwanderful, is about to blow your mind. The most wonderful real estate podcast ever promises to be your go-to podcast for everything that life has to offer. You are entering the Dwanderful Zone. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the most wonderful real estate podcast ever. I'm your host, Dwan Van Twyberg. I'm America's most sought-after real estate investor, and I have such a great episode in store for you today. As you can see, I have this handsome young man, Adam Zak, so that would make him one of my wicked smart men. So we're going to dive in. We're going to see what Adam's all about. We're going to see what's happening. In the meantime, the motto at Dwanderful is people before profits. So if that resonates with you, it sounds like that's your kind of thing, I want you to opt in at Dwanderful, D-W-A-N-D-E-R-F-U-L. Dwan and wonder and wonderful makes Dwanderful. And I'll send you a free ebook, How to Flip Your Way to a Fortune, and a whole bunch of other free stuff. So just opt in over there and check it out. But welcome to the show. And so, Adam, thank you for joining us. Welcome to the show today.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited too. So we start off, we have drinks with Dwan. So I'm having a coconut drink. What are you having today?
And I got a tea, a green tea.
So for everyone, remember, you're supposed to get your drink. We're going to take a drink. We're going to take a breath. We're going to put all the things that are bothering us behind us right now. So you can just tune in and listen and learn. And you're going to have some fun with us. I promise you'll have fun with us. So cheers to you. Thank you for being on my show today. Cheers to you.
Cheers. Mm.
Folks, this stuff is so good. Okay, everybody, take a deep breath. Shake off the world and have fun with me and Adam for a little while. So Adam, you are so cute. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I was just saying, on the backdrop, I just feel wonderful just looking at your background. You got the flamingos, you got the lights, everything's rocking.
Wonderful.
Wonderful. Very
wonderful. Dwan and wonderful makes wonderful. I know. It really is fun, though, isn't it?
It is.
You know what? You got to have fun in life. Everyone is so serious all the time. It's like, oh, for the love of God, can people just like loosen up a little bit? So I feel like, you know what? If you can't have fun during a podcast, where can you have fun?
I know. At first, I was wondering. I was like, okay, I could see the flamingos and I can see the purple around them. And I was like, okay, so what is the purple? Because I'm not an interior decorator. So I'm like, okay, I know there's something there and it looks good. But because that's not in my skill set and it matches the hair, I was like, okay, what's over the flamingo's head? Is it a hat? What is it?
So these are hats from the 1920s. I actually bought real authentic 1920s. Yeah, because, you know, they've got the boas and they've got the little hats. So this is Daisy Mae and this is Delilah. They're my sidekicks. And so I got them old-fashioned hats. And purple is the color of royalty. So because I am real estate royalty, I decided to go with the purple thing.
If it fits, I would not have guessed from the 1920s.
Yeah, these are authentic. These were so expensive. These are authentic 1920s. I had to bid them on an auction.
Where did you get them? So it was an online or in person?
No, I bid for them on an auction. I got them from an auction. And they're so fragile. So I just have to leave them on all the time because there's like paper stuffed under there. So they'll stay onto the heads. So I don't want to use a bunch of glue and stuff. So they're really just... So I do actually have, my flamingos have eyeballs, but the hats just kind of lay over top of the whole head. It just adds to all the wonderfulness.
It sure does. You know, you get some people from Fargo here who've got a lamp, a couple leadership axioms, and then some trophies that my kids have gotten me. You get both sides of the equation.
That's right. That's why we do it. So that's why we do it. And you're from Fargo, no less. We were just talking about that. It's like, you have to be committed to live up there. That is some cold weather.
Yeah, I usually tell people that I came in on my covered wagon to come in to do this podcast episode. Me and the other three people here in Fargo are all hosting the town hall meeting, so I get the microphone for the day or for the hour.
That's so fun, though. That's fun. Like you said, you got to be committed to live up there. But, you know, everyone's got their own thing. I'm in the mountains of Colorado, so we all have our thing. Okay, so what I want to do is I would like you to tell us, like, in a sentence or two, who you are, how we reach you, and what you do, like a summary. And then I'm going to ask you a bunch of super fun questions. And we're going to find out how you became Adam Zach, the wicked smart man of the day. So what's your deal?
So I tell people that I'm a family man with a business, not a businessman with a family. You can reach me by going to homeequitypartner.com or engineeringrei.com, which is where we help investors or I help dads get into real estate. And the last thing that you'd want to know about me is I was a state chess prodigy when I was younger. And so I'm going to try to instill that into my kids. My dad had taught me when I was super young. And so I always got into chess and I really enjoy playing chess.
Yeah, that is so cool. So homeequity.com, and you're a family man with the business. I super love that.
It's I stole it from another mastermind that I'm in, and I have their hat. I'm not wearing the shirt today, but it's Front Row Dads, where a lot of times either dads or men or something, they have the W-2, plus they want to do the side hustle, so it really starts to pull at them. Uh-huh. And it's like, okay, well, I'm doing this for the family. Well, if you do that for 5 years or 10 years, turns out when your kids are older, you know, you've kind of lost that time. So the idea is like, okay, how can I show up and build a business? And it turns out real estate is a wonderful way of buying back your time. And so I did a bunch of stupid things before then, and then eventually landed on real estate. That was the piece of it that's really allowed me to be with my 5-year-old, 3-year-old, and 1-year-old a lot more than I think. So I am 35.
35. So my son just turned 32. He's got 4 kids too. So he's the kind of where you are. He's like building the business, got the 4 kids, raising the family. It's like, hey, listen, I know you want to go off and like work like a crazy person, but these kids are only little one time. And I'm telling you, just like that, they'll be asking for the car keys.
That's right.
They'll be like, what the heck happened to my children that are now asking me to drive them all over the place?
Yeah, Steph, I remember the maxim, what is it? The days are long, but the years are short. And so I used to be a civil engineer, and my CEO of the company, who was a super, I would call him a wicked smart man as well, but in business. And then he ended up, you know, maybe getting divorced, not seeing his kids. He's like, you know what? You know when those 2-year-olds gave you the cuddles when they were younger? He's like, I never got it. And I was like, ooh, that one hit deep. Deep for me, you know, personally. And so that's where just try to do my best. I still sometimes feel like buying a house is easier than getting a toddler to eat vegetables. And so I'll like gravitate towards that. You get the highs and the lows, but it's just wonderful to, you know, be able to quit the job, do this full time, have more flexibility, still not complete freedom, but just what real estate can do for the life of travel and all the other things you want to do.
It is true. And you're never going to have 100% of time. First of all, I don't think you or your kids would truly want to be together 100% of the time, because like nobody needs that much togetherness. But you know, you're right. It gives you the freedom to like do the things, go to the soccer. My kids were in swim. They had swim meets all over the state of Colorado. We were always going to the swim meets and going to the things and traveling and doing all the things. And I never missed any homerooms. I was the field trip mom. Anything that there was, I did all. I never missed any of that, because that's why I wanted to work for myself. So
how wonderful of an impact on
it is. And yeah, I'm really happy to say, like, I never put my kids in daycare. I never missed anything. I really didn't. And I worked my butt off, don't get me wrong. But I never missed the stuff that I felt like I would want to look back on and go, yeah, I was the Girl Scout mom. I was that mom. I was that girl. I did all that fun stuff. And my kids appreciate it now.
Yep. And for me, it's like, okay, I think I found what being a full-time stay-at-home dad would look like. And it turns out that although it sounds great and getting a bunch of time with your family, like turns out Adam still has passions and purposes and other things in life. Because if I, and there's some, you know, moms, dads that just love being a stay-at-home dad. And it turns out Adam's brain maybe doesn't wire that way. So I'm like, okay, how can we tag team this? Cause like my foot starts tapping. I'm like, ooh, what can I do? And how do I, you know, either get the words of affirmation or where's the next progressive thing? Because it can be a little bit of a thankless job wiping butts for, you know, a couple of years.
And you know, I was never a stay-at-home mom. I got involved in real estate after my daughter was born. And I just took her everywhere with me. She went to every rehab. She went to every, I just drug that child door knocking like for a decade. She's knocked on thousands of doors. She's been to 1500 closings. I mean, I've drugged that child. I was like, come on, girl, get the car. We have stuff to do today. Mom ain't sitting around the house.
Yes. What a wonderful way to invite them in. How much did she catch, you know, during all of that catching Dawn in the pursuit of excellence.
She's got rentals of her own and she does deals and she enjoys her traveling time. And like she caught a lot. That's all she knew, really. And then I married Bill and that's all, you know, his kids, we just threw them in the pile. So that's really all of our kids know. They don't really know anything else. And they don't need to.
That's right.
Teach your kids early. So you got three little investorettes coming up the food chain. Okay, so tell me, what does homeequity.com, what do you guys do?
Yeah, so homeequitypartner.com specifically trying to find homes for people that can't quite get a bank loan. And it's all the closest way I can describe it, it ends up being some sort of rent-to-own arrangement, but instead of us buying the home, we're now matchmaking. So we'll have an investor who's looking for some sort of return and he's buying a home for someone that's 1 to 3 years away from a mortgage. So almost like a private mortgage. Where turns out Adam Zuck can't get a mortgage because I left my civil engineering job and the banks don't like me, but I feel like I'm a pretty stand-up guy. So right. I'd be like, hey, would you buy me a house? And you'd be like, I don't know. He's in Fargo. I don't know much about Fargo. So he'd be like, well, what's your credit score? You know, what's your debt to income ratio? How do you make money? And then probably a couple more, like, where's the property located? Is it a good area? Okay, what's the home condition? But if I'm like, hey, I want to buy a new build, like new construction, $500,000 house, and I have an 800 credit score, could you just go get a bank loan for me? Because you could get a DSCR, like non-owner occupied. But if I want an owner occupied home, banks are a little bit less forgiving on that sense. Mm-hmm. And because if you're in real estate and you show a paper loss every year, so like, it doesn't matter what your debt to income ratio is or your debt is because your income's zero. So you can't even get to an appropriate ratio because whatever it's infinity or a broken number, like their calculators don't compete. So all we do is we'd say, okay, well, maybe Dwan could buy Adam a house, whatever your payment is, I'll just give you something extra and then mark up the price. And then that's kind of the transaction from A to C that we're orchestrating.
So you, because I love the idea. So you are working with the investors, finding them funding, or are you also finding the homeowners as well?
Yeah. So the main thing is finding the homeowner because the investors typically can get pre-approvals and traditional conventional loans because it's like attorneys, doctors, lawyers, engineers. So they can get the loan. They can do it. So our job is to market and find the individuals who can't quite get a bank loan. So like somebody was moving from Tennessee to Texas last week because their job change was different, even though they had a job letter and they were making twice as much as what I make. They're like, well, the loan officer is like, well, it's not the same kind of income. And so since it's not the same kind of income, you got to wait 6 months. I'm like, well, I don't want to wait 6 months. And so like, oh, cool. Let's do this. You move in. It's a lease. You have an option to buy. Here's your set price. Of course, if there's a default, you know, you have all different kinds of clauses, but that's the goal is like, okay, they're kind of a bridge until they can get the traditional financing where the bank sees the 6 months or a year of employment history, and then he buys out the investor.
Nice. I really love that. So if I was coming to you and I want to buy a house with these conditions, what would I be looking at for like an interest rate? Am I getting a 30-year loan? Am I getting a short-term loan? Will I fix my credit? Like, what's it look like for me, the homeowner?
Okay, so yeah, the terminology that we've started using and just stole it from the Joe McCalls and the Wendy Pattons is the tenant buyer, and then the I'm going to call it the active investor. So the active investor is the engineer who can get a pre-approval letter, and then the tenant buyer is someone looking for a home. And so in general, we started off with like 1 or 2% down, which we've now changed to like 10% down as a minimum. Because it turns out if you get into a home and then somebody has to foreclose or evict on you, turns out the investors have a lot of skin in the game. So in general, I would say it's probably close to 10% down in the 1% rule. And so if it's a $250,000 house, maybe putting 25% down and paying $2,500 a month and then getting, you know, $250 a month as either rent credits or, you know, true principal pay down, depending if it's a lease with an option to buy or if it's a contract for deed, because there's a couple different ways of doing it.
Nice. I like that. And so the people that you find, how are you finding the houses from foreclosure?
So we used to do that. We called that kind of version one, where we found homes at a pretty good deal. Then we would fill them with rent to own or, you know, tenant mm-hmm. buyers. And then I liked your people first, property second, because our model is people first, property second.
Before profit.
Yours is people before profit. Ours is people before property.
I love that too.
And so like when you were saying it, I was like, oh, we're going to say the exact same tagline, but since yours is people before profit. Perfect. Yeah. And so what we actually do is we find the person. They go shopping with a real estate agent and then they go pick the house off the MLS. So it's not an existing set of inventory. So instead of being able to shop at 100 homes that are rentals or, you know, from an existing inventory in Phoenix, Arizona, like maybe there's 5 homes that are rent to own, they can actually go pick out one of the 1500 homes on the MLS.
Wow. That's really great. So if they can shop and they can get someone with the MLS and then they come to you. So how do they find, I have not heard of anyone that does this. I have a lot of like newbie, this is why I like to interview people without having like this long talk ahead of time. Because especially if it's something I don't know a lot about, it's like, oh, something new. So I always love learning new things. And so I ask questions I feel like somebody new would ask you, like I am asking you now. So the people go to the MLS, they go shopping, you've got an investor lined up. How do they find you?
So we have found them before they even start shopping with a real estate agent. So what they would do is like, whether it's a real estate agent may have referred them to us, a loan officer, or we have Facebook ads, Google ads, we're doing all kinds of marketing and we're trying that out. It's just like, okay, for the 130,000 people searching rent to own every month, and the 1 in 10 people that get denied a bank loan, which is like 2 million people in the United States.
Oh, yeah, a lot.
Where are they all going? And I now became a licensed mortgage loan originator. So I say step one is just fix your issues. Maybe it's debt to income. Maybe it's credit. Yeah. Maybe it's employment history. So you can just wait and then go get a loan. But there's some individuals like, hey, I want the house now, and then I'll figure out the loan later.
Those are
the people that are like, I have to move. There's nothing available for rent. I don't want to, you know, throw money away on rent or whatever it is. I want to lock in a price. And so those are the individuals that find us. They'll find us and then we'll run them through basically an underwriting as if a loan originator and an investor was underwriting them. And we say, okay, based on your, call it risk rating, you have either a 5% down, 10% down, 20% down. Like if they're like, well, it turns out I'm just getting out of bankruptcy. You're like, oh, well, you probably are going to need to put like 25% or 30% down because you're riskier to someone because your chance of default is less. And so an investor is going to want to see a lot more skin in the game. So typically they find us, they basically get pre-approved with us of, hey, this is your max monthly payment that you can afford, not to exceed more than 3 times your income.
Mm-hmm.
And here's your down payment range, depending on what sort of house that you're looking for. And so then they're like, okay, cool. I know I can get up to a $325,000 house with 7.5% down and pay $3,000 a month. And like, great. Hi. So then we say, okay, cool, go ahead. And then we tell the agent like, hey, by the way, they're not going to be on title. Our LLC or the investor's LLC is going to be on title because they're taking title and then entering in a lease with an option to buy or a contract for deed with the tenant buyer. And so the tenant buyer is not going on title and we're not a first position loan. It's a little bit different where if you've heard of Divvy Homes or Home Partners of America, they're doing this on a large scale where they call it their lease with the right to purchase or you know, test drive the home, but we're not really in the mode of test driving
the home. I like that.
Yeah. And so with those models, I would say those are really great for people that are like, hey, I want to put 1 or 2% down. I want to test drive it. If I don't like it, I can walk away. With ours, it's more so like these people want the home and us or the investors don't want the home back. So that's why we have more skin in the game.
I love that. That really is a really, yeah, that's a really, I think you're the first person I met that actually does that specific thing. That's a really good niche to fill because they're not leasing with this. That's why I don't like lease options is people live in them forever and, you know, they take care of them or not. And they're like, yeah, I don't want it. Here you go. And nothing against that. I've done a million of them, but I always would rather take that house subject to. So if I come across like a lease with an option to, or someone that wants, I'm like, I'll buy a subject to and I'll sell it to you. And, you know, I'll be the bank and, you know, but the homeowner is still on the deed and I've got my new person and I do a lot of subject twos. I've never been, and I know, like you mentioned, Wendy, she's always taught lease options and things like that. And I was like, I've never been a big fan of that, but I really like this because like you're getting them in a home and investors putting up the money. I'm sure you guys, because you're on the title and they're leasing it to buy it, they're not going to do it. They can't default because you just evict them. Do you just have to evict them?
Yeah, if it's a lease option, it'd be an eviction. If it's a contract for deed, it'd be a foreclosure. And then depending on what state you're in, sometimes an eviction is like 3 weeks versus like North Dakota, a foreclosure is like 7 months. And so that's why, depending on how much they're putting down, what the investor wants to do, like if I have to foreclose on someone, I'm like, ooh, that's 8 months that I got to sit on that home. There's yeah. added risk for that.
Do you ever have them do a deed in lieu of foreclosure and have a deed signed back to you? So if they default, you can just file the deed and like say, here's $5,000, move out.
That is a great idea. We have not implemented that, but we have thought about doing that with the escrow. And so if they default, basically they've already pre-signed the deed and away you go.
See, there
I
you
like
go.
It. And not only that,
that's what I do with all my subject twos. They all do a deed in lieu. And I say, and I'm like, hey, listen, if you have any trouble, you call me, like, call me. Don't make me foreclose on you. Call me. I'll give you some money to move out. Let's just part on good terms. And I've only had about maybe 10 out of 350 that were like, hey, Dwan, I can't do it. Here's just, I'm going to move. And I like gave them all money and no one's ever, never had to foreclose on anybody.
That's awesome. And I would argue that you are buying right and potentially selling right, where we are not necessarily buying right, but we're selling it right in a profitable manner. So if you can buy right and sell right, like I would admit that I like your model from an economic standpoint higher. We've landed on this niche more from a, hey, this is unique that nobody else is doing where we can buy the MLS property. So that's why it's people first, property second. Similar to your people first, profit second, and that way they can go shopping and we don't have to find the property. So we're not finding motivated sellers. We're finding motivated bank denied individuals, which is a market that not a lot of investors are going after.
I don't know anybody doing it. You're the first one. Yeah, because the houses I get, someone's losing it in foreclosure and they deed it to me. And then I put out ads, you know, rent to own, no credit, no problem. And the people that are coming are buying a house that may need some work. It's been in foreclosure. You know, it's got all the issues and the stuff. It's not like, hey, here's this beautiful, pristine house off the MLS. Like, you're going to have to put some money or sweat or something into it to get it. So I really love that model. I think, as far as I know, and I certainly don't know everybody, but I don't know anybody doing that. So
I've been doing this a long time. So that makes me feel, that makes me feel good. Or it's scary. Niche. That I'm a pioneer and I'm going to get shot in the back with arrows because we're not thinking about something, but we use a real estate in every transaction. There's an appraisal on every transaction. Yeah. The tenant buyer gets a home inspection prior to everyone. So they know exactly what they're getting into. And that's why, you know, the repairs and maintenance are on them because they're more like a homeowner. So the investor likes that, you know, there's either no repairs or CapEx. And it's just an interesting way of getting people into a home and having investors cash flow some money, especially in this economy.
So if I'm the investor, I say, hey, Adam, I've got $500,000 I want to place. And maybe you find like a person, $500,000 house. What? How much interest am I making?
So I would say maybe a net effect of like 10% or a 10% cap rate. However, most of our individuals are leveraging.
Yeah.
In that
cap rate is still really good though.
Relatives. Yeah. So because And it changes, right? So a year ago, maybe it was a 7%. And now, like, because most of our investors are borrowing at 7 or 8%, there's got to be some sort of yield on that. Because if they were borrowing at 7 and lending out at 7, there's basically no profit. And who, and there's some individuals that are okay with just a 7 or 8% return. But otherwise, it's like, okay, you could have what I like is double digit returns backed by real estate. And so that's a fun, you know, kind of fun avenue. But in that example, you know, I would say, okay, well, the tenant buyer brings in 100,000 instead of you bringing $500,000 to the table, just go get a loan for 400,000. So you're into it for zero, your mortgage payments, 3,500 PI, TI, whatever. And then you charge them 4,200. So you're cash flowing $500 or $700 a month with no money in, and you have a property at an 80% loan to value. So in the event that they default financially, it might actually be in your best position. And then we stumbled across something. I was like, well, how do these banks do it? Because they have, if somebody's putting less than 20% down, like there's risk for them. FHA, like 3.5% down, like they're going to foreclose. And like, oh, well, they just do PMI. Yeah. And I was like, oh, well, can I just do that? And they're like, no, you can't. You're not a bank. You're not a loan. I was like, well, can I purchase like mortgage insurance, like just as an individual? And so we went down that path, and it turns out that you can purchase rent guarantee insurance, which is the added benefit of going rent with an option to buy. So if someone defaults on our rent-to-own contract, the investor still gets paid for 6 months of lost rent.
What's that called?
So it's called rent guarantee. There's three big companies that do it. Number one is the guarantors. Number two is called Leap. I think it's Leap Easy now for what they branded it to. And then Single Key was in Canada, and they're launching in the United States. But it's like the equivalent of $100 a month that we then make the tenant buyers pay for. And so if they default, you basically have this $20,000 to $60,000 insurance policy, because your biggest risk is them defaulting.
Yes.
And so we started layering all this stuff up.
That's brilliant. I did not know that.
Yeah. So if you go with the guarantor's route, I think they have to have a minimum of a 620 credit score. But Leap, they literally don't do any underwriting. You just place a coverage amount and pick anywhere from $10,000 to $50,000, and away you go. And I was like, I don't trust this, because it sounds too good to be true. And so we've started enforcing that on all of our policies over the last 7 months. And so we're just placing rent guarantee insurance, pay $100 a property on it. And just for the peace of mind that if somebody has to go, they pay $1,000 for eviction, $1,000 for repairs, and up to 6 months of lost rent, which could be, you know, $2,000 a month adds up pretty quick. And that's like the worst is when you have the holding costs, you're paying the mortgage, you're not getting rent, you're doing the repairs. And it's just like, but it's now it's like, oh, well, now we got the worst case scenario is now we have the option fee. Plus we have this, you know, basically insurance policy. And so pretty excited about rolling that out with the whole goal of if there's some way of privatizing the mortgage industry, because I would really like to lower our cost to the tenant buyers. We haven't figured out a way to do it because there's a risk. If you're bringing $500,000 to the table, I want to make sure investors are protected. I understand it's the tenant buyer picking the home. And so we're just trying to find that balancing act of what the market is willing to do. And I hope that someday that I can be at a lower, I'm going to call it effective monthly payment than even Fannie Mae. Just if we get smarter.
That really does fill a void. Like that's between the people that want to rent, between the subject twos, the people that really have the money, want to buy the house, but the credit's just like not there. That is a niche that does need to be filled. That really is brilliant. Did you come up with that?
We did 100%. But this was business number five. So I can tell you about business number one that was dumb, business number two that was dumb, business number three that was like, okay, business number four was buying a house for college kids. I said, hey, college kids, go pick a house for sale and pay the 1% rule. I'll just go buy it. But then they left after a year. And then so then the market rent came back, and I was like, oh, well, that didn't really work. And then I stumbled upon, you know, Chris Crone and Joe McCall and Wendy Patton. I was like, oh, what's this lease with an option? So I'm like, okay, well, I got existing inventory. I was like, okay, well, that's one way of doing it. I was like, well, wait, I don't want to hold the property. What if they actually picked out the home? And before I even knew about Divvy Homes or Home Partners of America, we just started going around that. It was like, hey, banker, like, do you have anybody that you denied? They're like, yeah, here's somebody. I was like, well, what if I buy them a home and they just refinance with you in 6 months?
Yeah.
You're like, well, I like you because you got a real estate experience, you got a credit score, you got W-2 income. And I was like, oh, let's try this. and see where we go.
Nice. Honestly, that's brilliant. I love it. I'm going to say far and wide. That will get spread far and wide now.
Wonderful.
It is brilliant. So my next line of thought would be, okay, I'm the homeowner. I got a house. You got me. And I'm like, oh, Adam's a rock star. Now, I have obviously some credit issues or something that has to be fixed, or I could have gone to a bank. So do you say like, okay, here's a person, or here's a list of things, or here's how we're going to make your credit stronger? And do they have a time frame? Like, can they live there 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, forever till the end of time?
One of my...
Is that too many questions at one shot?
That's a great question. One of the things that breaks my heart is people that put people into homes knowing that they'll never buy the house. They take their five or 10 grand, go for a year, rinse and repeat. And it's extremely financially lucrative because you're basically getting 10 grand every time, then turning it over. And so our podcast, Pre-Approved, is dedicated only to the people doing rent to own and how to do it the right way without getting caught. So all of ours are 3 year right now, 3 year lease with the option to buy.
That makes me happy to hear you say that, because nobody can fix their credit in a year to turn around the loan they need to. And that makes me mad too. I see people do that. And I was like, yeah, but you know, in a year, they can't refinance that house. Like they need 3 years. I do my subject twos. I give them 5 years before they have to refinance.
Max. I love that.
Because you can't fix your credit that fast.
And the truth is they honestly believe that they can fix it in a year. And some of them do, but sometimes like credit is just weird, or getting your tax returns or whatever it is. Like just takes longer than you think. And then adding in extension clauses into our, you know, options so that they can, you know, extend it if they need to be. And that was part of the reason that I became a mortgage loan originator. Is like, okay, I really want to, instead of just saying, okay, go make sure you're talking to a loan officer, make sure you're talking to a credit repair specialist, make sure you're talking to a debt consolidation person, whoever it is, like, instead of just saying like, hey, you should do this. It's like, okay, how is that now a service that we bring in-house? And we're trying to launch what we're calling Mission Home Possible, which is basically how do we get everyone that is in an existing rent to own contract for deed, whatever.
Yep.
Eligible to actually buy the house, because that's a win for everyone. Everybody wants them to buy the house. So it's like, okay, what would that look like? Is that a community? Is that a course? Is that? And so right now we're not live with it, but it's something that we're like, okay, we've identified this as a pillar to success in our own program. Step one is just getting them into the house, because they're already, you know, giving us 5-star reviews for just getting them into the house. Cause like, that's what they wanted. But it's like, okay, well, you got into the house, but we still want you to exit successfully, because then it's a win-win for everyone, especially when we put people in the houses in 2019 or 2020 and then things shot up and they're like, oh, that's pretty good. Of course, it could have went the other way, and then the investor, you know would have actually been caught with it. So there's some benefits of doing a lease option if you have some downside protection, because you have the right to purchase but not the obligation in that specific sense. And so that's the next pillar of what we're experimenting with, is like, okay, how do we put them into the underwriting? How do we do this credit repair what if simulator that the loan originators use? Who's the best credit consult, you know, credit people that we can do? And then how do we, I don't want to say force them to do it, but how do we increase the likelihood that they're going to buy back the home? Because right now it's at 80% of who's bought back the homes, which in our industry is incredibly high.
That's high though.
And I think it's going to come back down, because we approved a lot of people that we maybe shouldn't have, that like, okay, we're going to eat the financial cost. So that's just like business, like startup lesson learned. It's like, oh, you get a home and you get a home because it sounds good. And then they're like, oh, well, turns out I'm not paying it and I didn't take care of the house. You're like, oh, I wish we would have learned a little bit more. And so some of them, we own a lot ourselves, and any single pre-approval that we offer out, we're going to take ourselves if some investor doesn't want to. We're at the point right now where anybody that's on our email list, as soon as we send out a deal, it's gone. Because they're like, in this market, if someone's putting 10% down and I'm cash flowing like at a 12 to 20% cash on cash ROI, they're like, I'll take that all day, every day. And so, that's what we're, it's always kind of a two-sided market of like, okay, what's the investor willing to take from a risk to reward? And what's the tenant buyer willing to pay? Because an effective 9% interest rate is relatively expensive, but versus what alternative? You know, they could just rent.
No, I'm with you. I do the same thing on subject twos. You know, we raise the interest rate. We do all the same stuff like that. Now, if they don't qualify, say in 3 years, do you say, okay, we're going to sign new documents, you're going to pay some closing costs, and we're going to extend. You don't just boot them out, do you?
So there's, I'll call it three options. Depends on which vehicle instrument that we're using. So let's say it's a lease with an option to buy. At the end of 3 years, they have an option to extend for another 12 months for $5,000 in general. So that's one option. Number two is they can negotiate where they're like, hey, like, what if we did this? Can we keep everything the same? So that's based like the whatever. Or they could truly just be like, hey, I'm done. I'm walking away and I don't want the house. Or number four, let's list this house. Whatever we get beyond our investment, you get to keep. So maybe they walk away with money. Maybe they break even, or maybe they lose some. Just like if you bought a house today and tried to sell it tomorrow, between closing costs, you know, all that, like, it's not a financially smart move, but if they've been in there for 3 years and maybe they have the equity, we're just like, okay, list it. Here's what you owe. Anything above that, you get to keep.
I love your business model. You guys are so smart and so well thought out and young. You're young to be like, I didn't start my first deal till I was 30. So by the time I was 35, I still didn't know that much stuff. So I really love that business model. And you do it anywhere in the country, right? Anybody, anywhere that needs a loan.
Right now we are, which makes us unique, but also a lot of learning curves because there's different states. So getting real estate attorneys and figuring out what to do. But what we found is the most success has been kind of the Midwest to Southeast, where the price to rent ratio is more affordable. Because if you're in Colorado, where you got a $500,000 house, someone can rent that for $2,500 or $3,000, or I don't know the exact metrics, but in that's general, it's like maybe it's probably like a half, like 1 to 0.5 ratio. Whereas in Illinois, a $250,000 house, I can rent for $250 or $2,500 a month, which an investor from a cash flow play would much rather do that, even though Colorado is going to crush it on appreciation than this, you know, property in the middle of Illinois. They would much rather, at least from what we're understanding, play that because the tenant buyer is getting the upside because they're locking in a price at 4% appreciation, whatever per year. Whereas in, I would love, like me personally as a tenant buyer, I would love to do lease options in Colorado, right? Like, ooh, I can get into this house at 300 and lock in a price at 315 for 3 years. Like, I'll take that all day. So investors are like, well, if I'm not going to get cash flow, I want the appreciation or the debt pay down. And so most of our clients, you know, are from the, call it North Dakota down to Georgia, kind of diagonal with like kind of a swath. Like going through probably more reasonable price to rent ratios.
You know, it's funny because we buy all of our rentals in Iowa, in Clinton, Iowa, which is right on the Mississippi River. There's a bridge right there and Illinois is right there. And we do it for that same reason. The pricing doesn't go up or down, doesn't go crazy, but the rent is good and everything's like, it's always steady. Because here in Colorado, like, honestly, like a house that's like kind of a hood house, they're like $500,000, $475,000. And you're right, they rent for like $2,000. So I could take the same $500,000 and I could go buy some $50,000 houses that will rent for $1,000 a month all day. And, or have this one that's renting for like $2,500. So when you said Illinois, I was like, oh, yes, I am right on the water there with you. Right there.
You're smarter. You're in the state with much less property tax. Illinois is way, I mean, it rivals the Texas of the world. I think it's like, you know, besides Hawaii, it's pretty high in property taxes. So I like that you're picking the right spot there. But to that same point, like sometimes I still get a little bit jealous of like, you mean you just bought a house in Colorado, did nothing with it, held on for 10 years, and all of a sudden you've doubled your equity?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And it's like, well, I like the cash flow, but I also like some people are like, yeah, I just didn't cash flow anything, but I just held on to it for 5 or 10 years and appreciated by 12% per year because you bought it at the right time. And I was like, but you didn't do anything. And so like, but I'm like, oh, of course you did. They took the action. They bought the home. They sat like they were sitting, but like, so that's part of me, like just the investor in me is like, oh, like, sometimes it's just easier to just play the equity swing in California and Colorado and Florida and just like ride that versus like, oh, you're trying to do everything to get the cash flow. But you're right. They're not going to grow by a bunch and they're not going to decline by a bunch. They're just going to give you know, stable, steady cash flow.
Yeah. That's why I just the steady, because, you know, in the big long picture, I want to have a bunch of rentals and have all my buildings paid for and just like not worry about it. But you know what? I'll tell you what, being in Colorado, when they legalized pot, the property values went like so many people. Like, I could not believe how many people moved into the state. It's like, for the love of God, why are all of you moving into the state? The traffic, everything's so bad. It's astounding how many people actually moved into the state. And even in the mountains, it's like, oh my God, why are so many people living in the mountains? We all live up here for privacy.
And now all of a sudden there's construction and traffic and people going everywhere.
And all the highways in Denver, everything was like a 4-lane. Now they're making everything 6-lane. It's like, oh, for how long is this happening? But I don't think the state truly, truly realized how many people, like, it seemed like millions, just like, poof, they were living here. And a lot medical, because I know some people in the medical field, and they, you know, a lot of people moved with their kids, they have seizures, medical marijuana, like all the stuff. But they were really not prepared, truly, because they have built so many apartments down around in Denver and around in the hospitals and taken all these old buildings and made them into lofts. And so many times on the news, they were like, we need nurses and doctors and traveling nurses. Like, come to Colorado. Like, we need more people because so many people moved here.
Oh, and do you get the friendly, like, do you know where they came from, California, or just like the statistics of here's the jobs, here's where people can have fun, here's where everybody wants to live with the mountains? Because like, I don't hear, you know, I forget the four corners of, you know, I've stood there before where it's like, you know, you're basically in the four states of Colorado. I forget if it's Arizona, Utah, and I'm missing the other one.
I don't know. I should know. I do know, but I don't know right now.
But it's just like, for some reason, I just hear everybody just enjoys Colorado.
I mean, it's a beautiful
state. Just want to go.
It's a beautiful state, but I am telling you, I'm 64. So when I was a teenager, it was the 70s. So when we smoked pot, we were like sneaking behind the barn and like everything was sneak, sneak, sneak. And now like you go down to, and you just go walk downtown Denver, everybody just smokes weed. And there's that piece of me that's like, oh my God, you should be hiding that. You can't just smoke out in the open like that. But then I forget. It's like, okay, but it's legal, so you can. So even today, we just went to an outdoor festival a few weeks ago. And I was like, I can't believe people just walk out and smoke pot. Because in my mind, it's still like, you should be hiding. Like I had to hide able to do that. People just puffing and walking. And I'm just like, everyone's just stoned here.
I don't like to smoke pot,
so I really don't appreciate like everybody being stoned. You get behind a car, they're driving like 5. You're like, oh my God, get out of the way. And you're on a mountain road, so you can't go around them. You're just like, they're smoking.
Yeah.
So it's funny. My husband's never smoked in his whole life. I don't get it. And I said, honey, every time you get behind a slow person, stop rushing up on them. You're not going to make them speed up. You're going to freak them out. They're going to go slower. So just stay back. Let them drive 5 till we get to the main road and then buzz past the people.
Yeah. And you know, like, even if you can't, you can probably recognize it from how they're driving, what they're doing. It's like, man, when I was in Colorado, I was like, man, I just smelt it everywhere. Like, there was a strong sense. I remember my wife didn't even need her pregnant nose that during that time. Cause she's, you know, every time you get pregnant, you get that the super sensory overload of like different things. She's like, oh, I smell it everywhere. She's
everywhere. It's everywhere. There's no place you can go in the mountains. You want to go for a hike. People walk by you. It's like, seriously, can I not just enjoy the sanctity of the pine and the mountains? It is everywhere, which is fine. I was like, hey, teach your own, go have
so,
it.
So if
like,
trees,
literally it's everywhere.
So if trees take our oxygen or take our carbon dioxide and change it to oxygen, and then we take the oxygen and change it to carbon dioxide, is there equivalent of a reverse pot tree? Can we plant enough trees that like suck up all the smoke from the pots?
I don't know. Trees are stoned. You can't even go for a walk. I mean, really, it's just like, oh my gosh. I don't know. That's
trees
a good thing.
Stone.
We should look into that. That might be a business waiting to happen that was sparked here on the podcast.
Oh, man. I like that the trees are all stoned.
Oh, yeah. I mean, seriously, I like to go walk with my dogs. It's like, oh, everywhere. And I don't mind. It's just like, I don't know. I'm like old funny dad that doesn't like to do the stuff anymore. It's like, seriously, guys, just give me one place. I can sit in my own yard, though. No weed here, so.
you built that luxury.
Ugh, it's funny. It is funny. It was, I'm more used to it. But in the very beginning, I was always like, oh my God, you guys are going to go to jail. Like, don't do that. But, you know, it's just like, it's a hard mindset to change because till I was 55, It was like, that's illegal. You can't do that out in the open. And people just drive and they're in their cars smoking. It's like, I don't think you're supposed to do it when you're driving, though. I think it's not like drinking and driving, but nobody.
Yeah, I don't know the rules around that. We haven't quite got there.
I'm pretty sure you're not supposed to be like puffing a joint with a bunch of people in a car while you're driving.
Yeah, because can you do the same breathalyzer test? Is there the same equivalent, or does it have to be like a blood test? Because like, every time we're worried about it, because we'd always booze cruise where you drive the dirt roads and you drink, and then if you get caught, it's like, they could just breathalyze you, and then that's it. But if you're under the influence of something else, it's like, they can maybe do the eye test. Is that I don't know if it's the same equivalent.
I don't know, but I know you're not allowed to drive while intoxicated, and they consider that to be, or driving under the influence. I don't know. They probably have a test for it. But I will not smoke to find out. I'll read about it on the news.
It's a better way of learning. Yeah, I'll get my learning.
But I will
that.
Say that when it first came out, I thought, well, I haven't smoked since like the 80s. I think I'm just going to try. Just, one time. Probably shouldn't even be talking about this on my podcast, but all my people already know. So, and this is before your time. Like in the 70s, you could have a bunch of people and have a big old joint and literally smoke the whole entire joint. And this stuff they have now, I am not even joking. You take like two puffs and I'm like gone till next week. It is so strong. It's such a, I smoked with my son. Two puffs. I was high till like 8 a.m. the next morning. I was like, okay, I don't know what this is, but I don't want no part of this. This is like, no, I'm out. So I was like one and done. I said, I am never, that was like a decade ago. It's like, I am never doing that again.
You're telling me if I want to have a spiritual experience, I need to come to Colorado, lock myself into some nature, and if I take two puffs, then I'll really have an encounter.
My God, I was so high, and my husband doesn't ever smoke. He's never drank nothing, and my son and I were like, I don't know, 8 o'clock at night. And I was like, I'm gonna try. I used to like it back in the day. I'm not even joking. All night, midnight, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I'm like, oh my God, the sun is coming up. How is this humanly possible? So finally I was like, screw it. So I should not say this, but I took a Xanax. I was like, I need to come down. I need to go to sleep, something. I'm just like, I'm out of my mind here. It's been hours. I've eaten everything in the house and it's too much. And I was like, I don't understand how people can sit there and smoke pot like they do. So not my thing. So now I'm proud to say it's been a decade, but I did try it because it was legal. And I thought, I'm curious.
Curiosity. Yeah. Whew,
curiosity killed that cat. That was a one and done forever. So I see these people and they're puffing and puffing. I'm like, how are you walking? I was literally stoned till the next day. How are you alive right now? I don't get it. So, it ain't my thing. So I don't know. But I mean, people are very happy in Colorado. People are very friendly. Everyone's like, hey, man, what's up? Everywhere you go. So I'm like, I like the happy vibe. You never see two stone people fighting like you do drunk people. So there's some benefits, I think.
I haven't noticed that. We get a lot of the drunken brawls here. I don't know what it is. It's the lack of inhibition, but all of a sudden everybody's a MMA fighter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I worked in the bar business in my 20s. So many people drinking, getting into fights. And I've never seen two stone people fight. I think they're just like, nah, it's all good. Here, take this. And everybody's fine.
Yep.
I don't know. I have no idea. I don't even know how we got up on that. We're here to talk about you. But you know what? That's why we just roll with whatever comes up, because we just have fun and we're both wonderful today. All right. So let's jump some topics. Not that we didn't just jump, but we're going to jump again. Tell me your favorite band of all time.
Favorite band of all time is John Bon Jovi.
Oh, really?
I don't know what it is growing up in the, I was born in 88. So if it was growing up in the 90s, but yeah. I think it was like that. You had to wait so long until you could hear like the song on the radio, because you couldn't just play it on iTunes. You couldn't have it on demand. It's like, once It's My Life came on or something like that. You're like, or you're watching like MTV and like, you're like, I hope he's the number one music video, this week. And for whatever reason, that's the one that if I've still never seen him in concert, because I not as avid of a music fan as I used to be in high school. Like I went through techno, I went through that, I went through, you know, all different phases. And then I kind of lost touch. And so every time I hear music now, because I'm used to listening to like audiobooks and personal development and podcasts, I'll listen to music. I was like, oh, what a pleasant experience. Like I remember why people like music. It's like, it's just such a great mindset shift and I can really appreciate it. And so like, I almost never listen to music. So when I listen to music now, especially when I go back to like the music that I enjoyed, I don't want to be like the 35-year-old who's like, you know, feels like they're old, but like, yeah, some of the newer music, I don't know that I quite understand, you know, quite yet. But like just taking back to some of the 90s and 2000s, like, yeah, just rejuvenates music. The soul.
That was all the best music all the way up. Like, I love Bon Jovi. I've never seen them either, but I don't think they have a single song I don't know all the words to, because I used to buy albums. I've got all their albums. It's like, I love Bon Jovi. That was really good music. You know, raise your kids up with music.
Absolutely.
You have to really do that. You have to really keep that in your life, because kids really like music. And I know that you can agree. You hear a song and it takes you to a place. Every song that you like takes you somewhere. And you want your kids to grow up with memories like, oh, I used to dance in the living room with my dad on that song. Or I saw this person in concert. Or my mom took me here. Music is a big thing. And good for you on Bon Jovi. I did not expect someone at your age to. I love Bon Jovi.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
The big hair days. It's like, Lord have mercy. There was nobody more gorgeous than John Bon Jovi. It was like, Lord. What's your favorite food?
Favorite food would be pizza. I don't know how I get around it or what they do. I was even over in Italy for a while. And for some reason, I was like, oh, Italy, they're known for pizza. I'm going to go over there. Like, oh, this is going to be the best. And I was like, turns out Americans must just put so much salt, sugar, and fat into something that it like ruined pizza for me. Cause I'm like, you know what? Turns out I really like Domino's or Papa John's and this like Italian, like somebody was slaving making the dough. And I'm like, turns out this is kind of healthy for me. I don't know if I'm supposed to like it or not supposed to like it, but I was like, I enjoy every kind of pizza. But for whatever reason, apparently it's only the healthy pizza, because I grew up on basically throwing a pizza into the oven like two or three times a day going through college. Yeah, and then I discovered breakfast pizza and I fell in love when you put some eggs and sausage on it. I was like, now I can have it for every meal. It's awesome.
I went to Italy and the person who had pizza in Italy was like, what is this? It tasted awful. I was so disappointed. I didn't dare say anything. I was like, this pizza tastes terrible. And
is this what y'all are known for or something like that? Or like, should I order lasagna?
Oh my God, the same thing happened. I totally get it. I was just stunned at how different it was. Like, this is terrible. What? I didn't have any. I've been there three times. I only had it one time and I was like, that's it. Oh God, that's so
I'm gonna open up a Domino's change in Italy and I'll open up right next to door and be like, hey, you can try the local and then come get your fix, you know. Yeah, for
I'm like I 100% get that vision, because that's exactly what happened to me. I was like, and I looked for like Domino's and pizza. I couldn't find anything. It's like, oh well, okay. That's funny. Okay, what's your favorite part of the day?
Favorite part of the day is the 2 hours I get to myself before my kids wake up. Not that I don't love my kids, not that I'm like trying to get away, but I've now trained myself. I fall asleep with my kids every single night, or 99% of the time. So I go to bed at 8 o'clock. So I'm kind of weird like that. And so it turns out my body's just up at 4 because I've already gotten 8 hours of sleep, besides my toddler kicking me in the nuts 4 times and slapping my face because we're co-sleeping in the same bed. But besides that, then it's like, okay, I can actually get up. They need 10 hours of sleep. So I get up, do the kind of miracle morning routine, maybe go to the gym, get back before either as they're all waking up or kind of before they get waken up. And then you got the sunrise, get a little bit of prayer and scripture in. It's
there you go.
I feel like if I win the morning, I win the day.
Yeah, that's good. Awesome. Amen. Before they kick you in the nuts. See, we have talked about literally everything on this show today. We've gone from weed to nuts to pizza. You are so much fun, Adam. Okay, so just tell me one more time, how do people reach you?
Sure. So if they're specifically interested in what we're doing for the investments, because it is fairly new, because we used to just honestly steal all the deals for ourselves and we would just buy them all. But now my goal is like, if I can help other people quit their job, That is fantastic. Leveraging real estate. So the only way right now to get to us is homeequitypartner.com/investors. So without that, there's not even a link to kind of go to.
/investor.
Investors. But all right. I should know this.
It's like it's my first podcast.
Right. Yeah. No, it is investors with an S. So let me check that out. Or if there's people that just want to find me on Facebook, you can search Adam Zock there. And then the other group that I'm really looking at building is freeing dads from their jobs, which is engineeringrei.com.
I like freeing dads. That's so neat. REIengine.com?
EngineeringREI.com. So I used to be an engineer, so it's like engineering real estate investments, but EngineeringREI.com.
I love that. Freeing dads, like what a great thing. You're so great. You are just so great. So just like to summarize. So you're homeequitypartner.com investors, and you basically help people that can't. So I take notes so I can do like a summary. And you help homeowners that almost can get into a home, but not quite. You help them get in the home. They can shop the homes through the MLS. You have investors who will put up the money. Ideally, in 3 years, they fix their credit and they refinance or possibly sell or give it back or all really great things to do. I just really like that because I don't know anyone that does that. And that's a really great niche. I hope you like completely dominate that niche. I will help you in any way possible to make sure people find out what you do. You like Bon Jovi, you like pizza, and you like the morning. And I actually have more questions, but I didn't ask them because we got sidetracked on other stuff. So is that a little bit of a summary of what you do?
You nailed it. Thank you for the wonderful summary.
And you play chess. You're the state champion in chess. So I love that too. And you're a family with a business, not a business with family. I had a lot of questions here, but we got talking and laughing. I didn't ask them. I feel like that's a pretty good summary. You're a super awesome guy. So I am highly recommending that y'all work with Adam Zuck. And I said Zach in the beginning, and it's Zuck. Now, last thing. Oh, and also, if you guys had fun today, if you laughed, if you learned anything, I want you to start following and subscribing to my podcast. And what is the name of your podcast?
So we have the Pre-Approved Podcast.
The Pre-Approved Podcast. So subscribe to both because I'm just going to tell you, y'all know, hear me say this, podcasts are a lot of work. So subscribe to both. Give us some 5-star reviews. Go to dwanderful.com and opt in and you'll get a free ebook and flip your way to a fortune. And it talks about wholesaling. Okay. So Adam, last thing of the day, and I'll let you go. And I always like everyone to give us a word of wisdom, but it can actually just be a single word.
So if I'm choosing just a word, I would say leverage is my word.
That's a great word. No one's ever used that word before.
Whether it's finances, whether it's your own skills, whether it's other people, just figure out what you're really good at and pull on that lever.
I love it. Leverage. Okay, guys, there's your word of the week. So first of all, I want to thank you very much for being on the show. I appreciate your time, your energy. I know how valuable time is and you and all of you listening. I know you could be doing other things with your time. So I appreciate you spending it with me today. Does not go unnoticed. And we'll be back next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. And remember that the truth is in the red letters. All right, everybody. See you next week. Ciao. Bye, Adam.
Bye-bye. Take care.
Wow, wow, wow. How much fun did you just have? You listened to the most wonderful real estate podcast ever. Hey, do me a favor. If you love just one thing about the show, if you laugh, if you learn something, leave a 5-star review, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Don't forget, next week, same bat time, same bat channel.